For SearchSecurity.com, I'm Bill Brenner. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for March 19th, 2008. Today, I do things a bit differently and focus on one event, the data security breach affecting millions of Hannaford supermarket customers. Industry expert Roger Nebel joins me to discuss the possible causes of this breach and examine the pros and cons of data breach insurance. First, a review of the incident. Hannaford President and CEO Ronald Hodge issued a statement Monday on the Hannaford website, saying the company had contained an intrusion of its computer network that resulted in the theft of computer credit and debit card numbers. The data was illegally accessed from Hannaford's computer systems during the card verification transmission process in transactions, he said, adding that Hannaford is cooperating with credit and debit card issuers to protect customers who were affected. Right now, it appears 4.2 million credit and debit cards were compromised. I asked Roger Nebel, Director of Strategic Security for Washington, D.C.-based FTI Consulting, what he believes went wrong.
It's my understanding that there was full track data from the credit card. You know, when you swipe the card in a point of sale, you typically, the point of sale application reads all of the track data off the card.
Mm-hmm.
So at the person's name, the full account number, the expiration date, and the CVV, the card verification value, which is that three or four digit cryptographically derived number that's essentially the security code for the card. So that track data, you're never supposed to store that post authorization, and especially the CVV value, because if an attacker gets all that track data, the full magstripe data, they can produce a counterfeit card.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what happened in this case. So what's supposed to happen, the payment application, whether you build it yourself or you purchase it, the payment application needs to process and send all that data to the processor, to the acquiring bank. The acquiring bank needs the name, account number, expiration date, and CVV for a card present transaction. That's how they can say, okay, yeah, there's a customer there and they're holding a valid card because I read this track data off of there. And they match up the CVV with the one that Visa or MasterCard or Discover or Amex generated to go with that card. It's a specific value that goes with that card. Then you get authorization back, and as soon as you get authorization back, you're not allowed to store the CVV, so you're supposed to delete the CVV, overwrite it, you know, securely make sure you do not have that CVV stored. And then if you retain name, account number, expiration, you either need to encrypt it or you need to truncate the card number down to the last four or five digits. You can store as many as the last five, but often they just recommend store the last four. Once you truncate, you don't actually need to encrypt after that because it's not sensitive data as far as the credit card company is concerned. Now, the expiration date is still sensitive on the customer receipt under FACTA, but that's kind of a separate thing. So your question is, my theory, what happened? My theory, what happened is that the payment application they were using was not validated against payment application best practices. And I say validated because Visa is the only one that requires that. And these payment application best practices, Visa highly recommends that merchants use a validated application, but there's no requirement. And usually the vendor of the payment application pays for that validation. So if Hannaford's built their own payment application, their own point of sale, then they would be the ones to go get it validated to make sure it doesn't store sensitive data beyond authorization. Likely they purchased the application from one of many vendors, and the merchant is again, highly recommended to buy one that's been validated, but the vendor, whoever wrote the payment application software, is the one typically who pays for and bears the burden of passing the payment application best practices validation. And essentially it's a subset of PCI DSS, and it, in essence, it says we protect and we don't store the information we're not supposed to store post authorization. So sorry, that's really the long-winded way of saying that my theory of what happened is the payment app was not validated. Mm-hmm. It stored the full track data. The full track data was not encrypted. And an attacker got in and harvested that data. Now, the attacker could easily be an insider. It doesn't have to have been an attack over the internet. It could be somebody, you know, could be a store employee. There's also a possibility they were skimming, which means that the guy at the front, and usually it's a guy, so that I can say that and not be accused of being biased.
Yeah.
They have a skimmer, so when they pass the card through, they actually read it twice, one for the payment application and one in the skimmer. Waiters, they typically do that, right? They pass it through their little skimmer and they collect the full track data and then later on sell that to somebody. So can't ignore the possibility of an insider. Although typically these are attacks over the internet. They break in through some vulnerability. They find the log file or the database where the unencrypted data is, and they harvest large amounts of it. So, you know, based on what I know, the press release, and I've probably seen one or two other things, you know, chatter on various bulletin boards and stuff, that, you know, that's likely what happened. The payment app was not on the approved list, or they didn't install it correctly, or they had debug turned on. Because there's always a troubleshooting mode where you store the full track data to make sure everything's working in the point of sale. There's also the possibility that that it was a debug, a misconfiguration error or a debug kind of thing, because you often troubleshoot. It could be that Hannaford couldn't connect to their processor for some reason, in which case you're allowed to store and batch up those transactions, and typically 24 hours. So that's another possibility. They were batching for some, their communication link wasn't working, or their payment application wasn't connecting, or their processor wasn't processing. Those are all possibilities.
Yeah.
I'll be back with Roger Neble after this message.
Want to know which NAC products can lock down your network endpoints or which firewalls can secure the application layer? Visit our brand new integration of networking and security school. Using a combination of webcasts, technical tips, podcasts, and quizzes, a top-notch roster of renowned information security instructors will help you learn how to secure the application layer, lock down network endpoints, secure remote offices, and much more. Don't wait. Get an in-depth look at the security-related and networking-related processes affecting enterprise network security. Visit searchsecurity.com's Integration of Networking and Security School today at searchsecurity.com/netsec. That's searchsecurity.com/netsec.
One of the questions that's been asked during this constant string of data security breaches is whether or not companies should start getting data breach insurance. Some industry experts have told me the insurance is too immature a product to buy at this time, and that one of the drawbacks is the difficulty pinpointing precisely how many people have fallen victim to fraud as a result of the breach. Here's what Neble had to say.
You know, it's always a weighing of risk. You know, let's talk about life insurance for a minute, right? There's term life insurance and there's whole life. And term, you're betting you're going to die, so you're going to pay a premium that's higher over a lifetime, but it's smaller in the short term. So you buy term insurance because you think, well, I'm probably going to die inside of a certain period of time, or a whole life product or an investment product where there's some residual cash value that you might pass on to your heirs or you might use in retirement. So you're betting you're going to live for a longer time, but you still want the insurance just in case there's an accident or something.
Mm-hmm.
So breach insurance is kind of a similar thing. You're breaching, you're betting you're going to, you're going to need this at some point. So if you think as a merchant that you've done everything you think you need to do, but you know, you still there, you know, it's an uncertain thing. Information security is hard. It's work. It's doing, protecting credit card data, doing information security in today's environment is hard work. If you've got, which is why lots of people get it wrong, it requires great skill and diligence and, so insurance has an important place. What it comes down to is the cost of it. For a small merchant, a policy, and especially, you know, merchants with small profit margins, the average net profit margin in a grocery chain is 3% in the United States, which is tiny. It's a very tiny, cost-conscious business. So, you know, a policy, $20,000, $50,000 for a data breach policy, and I don't know what prices are these days, Bill, but, you know, they're under $100,000 probably for these guys, but it still represents a significant amount of money to those guys. So that's the first thing, is getting over the cost of this breach policy for a small merchant. But if they've got the cash to do it, then yeah, I think it's a good thing to have, because it helps you. You know, there's three things you can do with risk. You can address the risk, you can fix it, you can transfer the risk through insurance policies, or you can live with it. So what we're saying by buying an insurance policy especially for a smaller business, that's an important part of risk management. That's that transfer of some of the risk. You're saying, I can't quite deal with all the technology issues, I can't quite deal with all the risk issues, so I'm going to transfer and buy some of that. Now, having said that, the policies don't, you know, the average cost of a break-in is like $5 million, right? The Poneman Institute does that study every year.
Yep.
So these guys are going to incur a substantial amount of expense for this break-in. I'm going to guess they're going to end up spending somewhere around $1 million on this. They're going to get fined for having the track data. They're going to get fined. Well, you know, they did the right thing if they indeed did pass PCI DSS, even on a self-assessment. If they can show, look, we did all the right things and you know, we passed all the categories, and because Visa will send in an investigator. So the short answer to that, Bill, and I apologize, I'm being wordy this morning, but
fine.
You know, insurance can be an important thing, and these guys probably carry liability insurance already. A grocery store, you get lots of customer traffic, you got product liability, you
people
know.
People slipping on milk spills.
Oh, my God. Yeah, my father and his business partner owned a corner grocery store for 23 years, so I know exactly all the risks in a grocery store. Yeah, you got product liability, you know, spoiled milk, people slipping and falling, there's just all manner of risks that they have. And so they're probably already carrying insurance. So a rider, which is what that would be on their general liability policy, a rider for data breach would be a good thing. And that, the problem is the insurance guys, you know, even though it's 10 years now that there have been data breach policies, they're still not mainstream. Data protection is still not mainstream.
Yeah.
I recommend it. That's the short version of all of that is I recommend it if you can afford it. You know, pay the $10,000 or $20,000 and at least buy something against that $1 million or $5 million that you're going to likely spend in the event of a breach.
And that'll do it for this week. The latest information security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. And you can always catch our Security Wire weekly podcasts featuring summaries of the latest news and interviews with security professionals at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Again, I'm Bill Brenner. As always, thanks for listening.